This episode includes mention of sexual assault. The cheerleading film Bring It On recently turned 20. It spawned direct-to-video sequels and a Broadway musical, and you can still find people who quote its best lines and relish the story of the battle between the Rancho Carne Toros and the East Compton Clovers.
Bring It On stars Kirsten Dunst, Eliza Dushku, Gabrielle Union, and Jesse Bradford, among others. And a lot has happened in 20 years that might make it feel very timely or very dated. I'm Aisha Harris.
And I'm Linda Holmes. And today on NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour, we're talking about Bring It On. So don't go away.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Capital One. Welcome to banking reimagined. Capital One checking and savings accounts have no fees or minimums and a top-rated banking app that lets you manage your money anytime, anywhere. Check on the account balance, deposit checks, pay bills, and transfer money on the go. This is Banking Reimagined. What's in your wallet? Capital One N.A., member FDIC.
Welcome back. You just met Aisha Harris, and joining us are Kathy Tu and Tobin Lowe, the former hosts of the Nancy podcast. Tobin is now with Radiolab, and Kathy is a supervising producer for the New York Times opinion audio team. Welcome, Kathy and Tobin.
Hi.
Hello.
It's such a delight to have you both here. We've been determined to reunite the Nancy team.
This is the first time.
This is the first time we've talked since the show ended. It's amazing.
It's true, Tobin. You sound so much older and wiser now.
What have you been up to?
I don't know how many of you listening are or aren't terribly familiar with Bring It On, but the story is that Torrance Shipman, played by Kirsten Dunst, is the new captain of the cheerleading squad at the very affluent and very white San Diego school, Rancho Carne. That's meat ranch or ranch meat, depending on how you think about it. She discovers that her ruthless predecessor as captain was stealing cheers from the East Compton Clovers, a mostly black squad led by Isis, played by Gabrielle Union. Eliza Dushku shows up as a new and somewhat reluctant recruit for Torrance's team, whose Discman listening brother Cliff, played by Jesse Bradford, takes a liking to Torrance. It's directed by Peyton Reed from a script by Jessica Bendinger. Aisha, how do you feel about Bring It On?
So, if my memory serves correctly, this was either the first or one of the first movies 12-year-old Aisha was allowed to see in a theater without an adult present.
Wow.
And I have very, very, very strong memories of seeing it there. And I feel like it's a movie that has stuck with me, even though it's not one that I necessarily return to as much as, you know, people of my age have. I feel like Mean Girls for me was a much more formidable teen movie. Mm-hmm. But I will say that it is, as you mentioned at the top, such a quotable movie for better or for worse. And I realized after not having seen it in, you know, years, probably a decade is the last time I actually watched it in full, how much of it still just like came back to me and popped in my mind really, really easily. I really, really enjoy the way in which this film treats cheerleading as more of a sport than it had been previously treated within pop culture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the running gag is that they've won all these championships, but the football team sucks. And so
that's one of my favorite jokes in the movie.
Same.
It's such a great joke. And I really appreciate it. Now, there are lots of dated aspects of it that are just, oof, you could not make this movie today in the way that they did. There's eating disorder, like jokes where the dance coach encourages them to get an eating disorder. This is also very clearly pre-J-Lo and pre-J-Lo in her Versace dress, mm-hmm. because there are lots of jokes about having too big of a butt. And I'm like, whoa, now. This is like,
yeah. Yep.
Everyone wants that butt now. And that's very different. I will say that for me, though, the highlight remains Gabrielle Union's character. And there was a really great interview with her in Vogue magazine for the 20th anniversary of this film. I can't believe it's been 20 years. And she talks about the ways in which she got the part. And she was like, look, there are some things about this that we need to change. So it was a very collaborative experience of her working with the director and the screenwriter and making sure that the character of Isis was not just like a villain, even though there are still people today who consider her to be the villain.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah, it really is ahead of its time. I still can't think of another teen movie that at least attempts to do the things that it does with cultural appropriation. And this is like before cultural appropriation was like a commonly used word. And the scene for me that does it is the scene where after Torrance has had her awakening or her awakening and realizes that like her whole cheerleading career has been a lie, she insists that her dad like make a check for the Clovers to be able to afford to go to the tournament so that she can beat them. And so she arrives and she's like, here's my check. And so let's play actually a little clip of the scene where Isis just rips up the check and is like, nope.
We don't need you.
Why do you have to be so mean? I'm just trying to do the right thing here.
Look, I'm trying to be strong for my squad, okay? That's what a captain does.
Well, I'm a captain too, you know. And I'm trying to make it right.
You want to make it right? Then when you go to nationals, bring it. Don't slack off because you feel sorry for us. That way, when we beat you, we'll know it's because we're better.
I'll bring it. Don't worry.
I never do.
And I just think it's a great scene because it is this character just being like, I'm not going to take your charity. I'm going to win fair and square. And frankly, this is the way in which I feel like most or a lot of Black people are brought up. It's like, we don't want handouts. We don't want you to give us these things. We want to earn it. And the irony is that the white team that Torrance is on, they all have to learn how to actually do work and like be good and not just rely on plagiarism. And so it's a great message. You know, they could have gone farther. There are obviously lots of homophobia as well. Like, maybe we'll get into that as well. But overall, Bring It On, still bringing it 20 years later.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that she didn't want Isis to be a villain, because to me, every time I watch it, I'm like, well, Isis is right about literally everything. Like,
everything.
She's right about the stealing. She's right about Torrance's motivations. She's right about the way she's being treated. She's right about the lack of respect. She's basically right about everything. And I think in a lot of ways, the thing I have always liked about the movie is that she is the character who you would expect to be the villain in a sports. If you think of this as a sports movie, then the opposing team, you know, captain, leader would be, you know, like the guy who runs the dojo in The Karate Kid. And she's not that at all. She's actually right about everything. Kathy, what do you think about this movie?
Oh, my God. So this came out when I was in middle school, and I was a huge Buffy the Vampire fan. So I only went to go watch this movie because I loved Faith. And Tobin hates this part about me.
I don't hate it. It's just a controversial take for Buffy fans.
I love Faith. I love Eliza Dushku. So the only reason I went to go watch this movie was because of Eliza Dushku. And she played this character that I tried so hard to relate to, because she's kind of considered the outsider in this like cheerleading world. And somehow I was able to like apply this to my life and feel like an outsider. And I really related to her. But then I was so pleasantly surprised that I loved this movie. And it was about cheerleading, which I had no experience with. And I just kind of assumed this is actually, it was a documentary. Like, this is what it's like to be a cheerleader. I think most of it still remains true. And I'm surprised, like, 20 years ago, they were talking about cultural appropriation. I didn't have those words then, but that's what was going on. And I'm kind of shocked. It's like when you watch an old movie and you realize how progressive it was at the time. And there are some things, obviously, like Ayusha said, does not work anymore. Maybe the whole Sparky Pollastri thing can just entirely go away. He didn't need to be there, really. But continue to love this movie. Continue to love Eliza Dushku as Missy. And that's my take.
Yeah. For me, upon the rewatch, I really feel like the movie starts as soon as Eliza Dushku enters. Mm-hmm. Like, she was so good in this in a way that I like maybe took for granted before, but watching it a second time, I'm like, wow, she really does a lot of the work in this to, I don't know, there's so many people who I feel like are delivering Disney Channel kid level acting, which like adds to the camp and I think makes it funnier, but I think her performance stood out to me on a second watching, or no, probably this time 100th watching of how good it was. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. My being a fan of hers exploded after this movie. I mean, because she was like the kind of person that I thought I would be around all of my friends who were not cheerleaders, but certainly of like the popular crowd at school. So I was like, okay, I'm going to take tips from this person.
Wear all black.
Wear all black. and then Carrie Achay.
Well, and when I first saw her, I was like, what is that? What is that hair? Are those twists or those tiny dreadlocks? And I was so relieved that her hair did not stay that way because I was like, did her hair stay this way? And I just don't remember it.
You know how in The Wizard of Oz, when the lion gets his hair done, that's what it kind of looked like, those ringlets? It was weird. I was like, what is this?
Yeah. Well, I'll just echo the sort of like this hit when I was entering high school, I believe. So there was something about this movie that it was like the first foray for a lot of us into having something that felt a little bit edgy that we could quote to each other and sort of like this like tilting at a more adult sensibility of humor and edginess without actually being that edgy or, you know, adult. But rewatching it, I think the things that I still love, I'm going to echo Aisha in saying that Gabrielle Union performance is really amazing. And it was amazing to revisit because in my mind, the Kirsten Dunst and Gabrielle Union characters are like the two pillars of this film. And rewatching it, Gabrielle Union has like half the scenes, if that.
Oh,
like
yeah.
She has very little to establish who this character is and the motivations and to get you to root for her too. And yet in my memory, you know, those two are toe to toe. They're representing, you know, these two leaders. So that performance still totally holds up. And then I think the other thing that it saves this movie from going maybe into a bad direction and sort of all these things we're talking about is that I still love that the Clovers win at the end. Like,
oh,
I think that's actually such an important choice for this film.
Yeah.
For honestly, like white folks to learn that if you appropriate in this way, you not only need to own up for it, you can still try your hardest to make it right. And it's still like not okay for you to win in the end. You know,
that's
like,
true.
I think the fact that the Clovers still take it is a subtle but like very important thing about this film. And I was so glad to like rewatch it and have that feeling again.
Yeah. In a way, the Clovers winning at the end of this movie is sort of like Julia Roberts not getting the guy at the end of My Best Friend's Wedding. It's sort of like it makes the movie a completely different like thrust. And in the same way, it requires that the main character sort of sacrifice what it is that they originally tell you that they want. And in most movies, you don't get the main hero of the story sacrificing the fundamental thing that you get told that they want, the person that they want, or the victory at nationals that they want, especially once you get the sort of, you know, everybody doubts Torrance, people don't believe in her, she has to sort of overcome all these doubters. It really puts you in a position to expect them to win.
Right, totally.
You know, I did have a moment where, you know, when you have the confrontation at the school where Missy and Torrance have gone over to East Compton High School and they are confronted out like in the parking lot by Isis and her two best pals. I didn't particularly love the fact that they were sort of threatening to beat them up. Like, I didn't love the fact that it was like you go over to this school with this black cheerleading squad and the black cheerleaders threaten to beat you up. I sort of wished that that had not happened. I also had the funny experience recently of seeing somebody on Twitter say, it's very upsetting that this movie has a sexual assault in it. It took me a second because I was like, what are they talking about?
Yeah.
And then I realized they're talking about the guy who makes the joke about taking advantage of the girl in the lift to feel inside her underwear, essentially.
Right.
And I think the movie tries to have it both ways a little bit in maybe implying that she's sort of into that or that she consents to it in some way. But they also play it like you can't tell that that's true. It's certainly not unambiguously true. And like I said, I think the movie wants to have that both ways. And having had that pointed out to me, that played really awkwardly to me as well.
Yeah.
But again, a lot of it is there's such a weird attitude towards sexuality among these kids because they're trying to have them be very like sexually frank in some ways and talk about gay people and talk about what team you're on and all that kind of stuff. But it's not done from a position of genuinely everybody being fine with whoever you are. Mm-hmm. It's just they just talk about it a lot.
I mean, I definitely think that the blessing and the curse of this and the dialogue is that it does sound so much like what I was hearing at school when I was that age. Like, they talk like teenagers that I was around talked. And so there was a lot of throwing around the F word and, you know, the D word for lesbian, like all of these really harsh words and framings. And, you know, we were all like 13 years old. We didn't know better, quote unquote. But like, I wonder how much of it was like a chicken and an egg sort of thing, because this was common in all of these teen movies. So we were watching these teen movies and they sound like us, but then in part, do they sound like us because we are watching these movies? Like, another movie I can think of that has a lot of issues with it is something like Can't Hardly Wait. If you go back and rewatch that movie, there's just so many things that are wrong with that. And that's the one with Jennifer Love Hewitt, where it's like the house party at the end of senior year. And it's just lots of things happen.
Everybody is in that movie.
Everyone is in that movie. And, you know, if you go back and rewatch a lot of these movies, there's always going to be at least a few moments that are just like, this is not okay. And I think Bring It On handles it better than most. Like, it because it does kind of try to have its cake and eat it too. And it doesn't always seem so vindictive. It just seems kind of like, this is the way people talk. But it is hard to swallow.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, it's interesting to hear you say that, Aisha, about the, like, chicken or the egg problem, because watching this movie again, it reminded me that, like, so I would have seen this freshman year, and then when I started coming out to people senior year, I suddenly remembered that I, like, dropped the F-bomb when I did it. Like, for a couple people, I would say, like, I'm a F-bomb. And it suddenly made me think, like, did I do that because of this movie and, like, watching it and sort of the casualness of, like, dropping that word? Also, to Linda's point, I think with, like, there were so many more instances of them saying the F word than I remembered.
Yeah.
And it does seem to hide behind the, like you were saying, the having it both ways, where not only is the asshole jock saying it, but, like, the gay character himself is throwing it around because he's so cool with it and casual with it. And I think that's how they sort of rationalized getting away with using it so much. I don't think that holds up, but I see what they were trying to do.
What pleased me the most about it was both that kind of framing around the Gabrielle Union character that we talked about and that great scene that Aisha played that is also my favorite scene in the movie. But also just like, it does have just a lot of funny lines in it. I think the opening sequence of this movie, the sort of cold open of this movie, is so funny and clever and establishes so much in such a short time. Mm-hmm. And on the other end, the credits bit where they're all sort of dancing together and there's a little bit of bloopering, which of course was very popular at the time around that time.
Yes.
Bloopers at the end of films. But I think both the very beginning and the very end really effectively build this kind of really funny, silly mood that I did very much enjoy revisiting. I'm not trying to be the buzzkill of Bring It On. I enjoy this movie a lot. It's of its time.
Yeah.
You know?
Definitely.
Yeah. The thing that I felt like worked the best for this movie was that every scene propelled the story forward. There weren't that many scenes that were just sort of superfluous. Though I will say the Jesse Bradford character was kind of useless as a love interest, but you had to have that in a teen movie.
He's into the Ramones, dude.
In the Clash.
He's a very particular kind of, I think, honestly, like 80s movie guy in some ways. Because the first time you see him, you see like the sneakers coming up the hallway and he's got the Clash shirt. And I mean, he's like the third generation photocopy of that guy already.
Yes.
You know? Yeah. He was giving me serious Paul Rudd and Clueless vibes. Not that,
absolutely.
Like, it's very similar where it's like, I'm cool, I'm deep, and you're just a, you know, vapid girl. Yeah.
Totally. But he's also, like, very sincere and makes her the mix. I think this is kind of the waning era of the actual mixtape, because he's also carrying around his Discman, as I mentioned earlier, at school. Discman. That was not a good technology.
Terrible. Terrible.
It's interesting that he occupies that liminal space between the mixtape and the Discman. I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
See, this movie does it all.
He's the Rosetta Stone of this movie. You know, he just captures.
All right. Well, we want to know what you think about Bring It On. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH and on Twitter at PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. Thanks to you all for being here.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And of course, thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. We will see you all tomorrow.
With civil unrest, the pandemic, and the economic crisis, you want to know what's happening right when you wake up. And that's why there is Up First, the news you need in about 10 minutes from NPR News. Listen every day.